From Pacifica Radio, KPFT 90.1 Houston, this is Open Journal in Exile. Open Journal is the Houston community magazine of the airwaves. Join us as Duane Bradley and Stephanie Coleman explore the wonder that is the Petro Metro and the people who make it happen. And now from our temporary, socially distanced, alternative studios in exile, somewhere in the greater Houston area, this is Open Journal in Exile. Let the conversation begin.
You are tuned in to Open Journal on Pacifica Radio, KPFT, 90.1 FM and digital FM HD channel one as well. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for your support of independent community media. Thanks for supporting Houston's community station. I'm Duane Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. Julia Lewis has been organizing within the climate movement for 2 years. She's a junior at St. Catherine's Montessori High School and also works on the action team at Sunrise Houston. Devin Guevara is a senior at Sharpstown International School. He joined the climate movement back in 2019 and has been working to advance a comprehensive solution to the climate crisis ever since. Vidya Mutupilai has been involved in the climate movement for the past 4 years. She is currently a senior at Glenda Dawson High School. All three are co-general coordinators of Houston's Youth Climate Strike. Welcome to Open Journal.
Thank you so much for having us. We're so happy to be here.
Happy to have you back in on Open Journal as we approach another Earth Day. Julia, I wanted to ask you to just get things started, some basics. Exactly what is a climate strike and how do Houston youth fit into that?
Yeah, of course. So climate strikes are part of an entirely youth-led international campaign that began a few years ago, demanding to set the narrative on climate action on a policy level. And you guys probably all heard of Greta Thunberg, who gained fame a few years ago, and she's the one who really kind of piloted this global strike movement. And the success of this movement is visible across the globe. You know, politicians at various levels nationally and internationally are really starting to talk about the climate crisis and the necessary solutions. But as we've seen over the past few years, climate action is still very slow moving. And so if we want to reduce emissions by, you know, 45% by 2030 or limit warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, we need to keep raising our voices in support of climate action, and that's where striking comes in. So Houston has been holding climate strikes for the past 2 years. We had our first big climate strike in 2019. It was September 20th, and that was the largest day of global climate action in history. And that was actually in Houston. That was the day after Tropical Storm Imelda. And so a lot of our schools flooded, people's homes flooded, right. Most kids were off of school the next day. So, you know, climate was on everybody's minds, and it just gave us yet another reason to be out in the streets striking. And so after that first big strike, a small group of us kind of came together afterwards and knew that we needed a more long-term way for youth to engage in the climate movement. And so we formed Houston Youth Climate Strike. We were originally based out of the Sunrise Movement Houston, and since then we've become our own autonomous organization. But we kind of came together and we started recruiting around Houston, and we were planning for Earth Day 2020, and our plans kind of got derailed by COVID, like many other things. But we had a very successful virtual strike, and we've been organizing virtually since then as Houston Youth Climate Strike.
All right. Is anything scheduled for Earth Day 2021, which is just a couple days from now?
We don't have a specific action for Earth Day itself, but we've been focusing over the past month on targeting financial institutions and asking them to divest, because banks are one of the biggest funders of the climate crisis. And so we're going to be launching a letter writing campaign this weekend, actually, to target Chase Bank and ask Chase to divest, because Chase is one of the biggest investors. They've dumped $268 billion into coal, oil, and gas just in the past 4 years. And so we will be writing a letter to Jamie Dimon, who's the CEO of Chase. And so we're launching that campaign this weekend and asking people to sign on to this letter. And then over the next couple of months, we want to do a lot of media work and kind of have like a public education campaign and be writing op-eds and letters to the editor to kind of increase public pressure on Dimon and Chase as a whole.
You know, I'm really impressed with the continuity of your efforts between school and life and COVID and graduation, and you're in a very sort of fluid age. How do you stay connected? How do you balance? How do you recommend for other students your age and even adults to manage that process?
Yeah, I think the coolest thing for me about the climate movement is there's a way for every single person to plug in. That's honestly one of the bad things about climate change is there's so much to be done. But because of that, there's really a way for every single person to get involved. We're all so busy and everyone has very busy lives. And sometimes it's really hard to find time to do something. But even if it's as little as just attending like a webinar or something to educate yourself, you don't have to be on the streets protesting if you don't have the time or capacity to do that. You know, balance is key. And if you're juggling too many things at one time, you're not going to be able to do everything as well as you could. So I think it's really important to find that sense of balance and figure out exactly where you fit into the movement and how much you can contribute. And I think then once you do that, once you've kind of found your place, you can find a way to really balance those aspects of your life and find a way that you can meaningfully plug into the climate movement.
So Devin, I wanted to ask you, what are the top issues that you're working on today and what's of most concern with you? I know there's a lot going on.
So I'm working on a lot of the same things that Julia is at Houston Youth Climate Strike. We did a lot of lobbying in this Texas legislative session in order to pass a bill that simply recognizes climate change with the intention of catalyzing that conversation about a changing climate among conservative representatives and liberal representatives in the state of Texas. As of late, we've been really trying to push for divestment from financial institutions, especially Chase, which is the number one bank that funds fossil fuel projects, just because we know that our legislators and our representatives are only able to do so much, and without the support from big corporations, not only in oil and gas, but in the financial industry as well, we aren't going to be able to reach carbon neutrality by 2050 or be able to really solve climate change in an equitable way, and in a way that's conscious of marginalized communities and communities that might not be able to pay the associated rising costs of goods from a transition into a renewable economy.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel our elected leaders are doing and working for you towards any of these goals here in Houston or in Austin or in Washington, D.C. these days?
Frankly, it's frustrating. Even Houston is an arguably liberal city and our representatives are Democrats and stuff, but even though these people are supposed to be on our side, I think that there's still so much that they could do. And we definitely received pushback from certain representatives at the national level, Congress people and state legislators who are afraid of addressing climate change because Texas is so oil and gas dependent. We have representatives whose districts include the Energy Corridor of Houston and who are afraid to push a comprehensive solution to climate change because they might lose their seat. You know, a lot of the times it's not because they don't want to, or not because they don't believe in climate change, but because they have to make a political decision to keep their seat, when in reality, the best thing that they could be doing is doing everything they can to push for an equitable solution to climate change. There are some legislators who are brave and who are leaders in their seats, and we're absolutely grateful for those people. But it's been so far hard to push people who are supposed to be on our side, and it's even harder to push people whose political campaign websites don't include climate change.
your generation is soon going to have both the interest in the greater good and voting power. What do you feel about that in the long term as a soon-to-be voter? And how do you feel you or other peers can influence their households, even if they're not old enough to vote?
Yeah, I think, you know, voting is one of the most powerful forms of civilian participation ever. You know, there's so much change that can come out of voting, and voting is such a tremendous responsibility. So I'm 16, so I still have 2 years, but the idea of voting really, really excites me. And I know there's a lot of power that comes from that. And so I think one of our biggest focuses as Houston Youth Climate Strike this past year has been get out the vote, voter registration, especially educating young voters and first time voters about the candidates that are on their ballot, how to go and literally how to vote. And you know, the things that you need to bring with you, and just like things like that have been a really big focus of ours. And you know, just having those conversations, like you mentioned, people even who aren't of voting age yet in their households, talking is one of the biggest things that honestly can help the climate crisis, because climate has become such a hot topic, such a buzzword, and that's kind of fueled by all of the political polarization in our country right now. And so people have a lot of perceptions that come to mind when they hear the word climate that aren't necessarily accurate. So one of the most important things we can do to raise awareness and to get people to take action is just to talk about it. So I think even if you aren't a voting age, you still have a voice that you can use. You can influence the people around you. You can educate the people around you. And I think that's one of the most powerful forms of action that we can all take.
Mm. Yeah. And if, you know, if I could just interject a little bit and add, I think something that Houston Youth Climate Strike has been really good at as far as engaging people our age is that we really try to make organizing and voting and activism something that's truly not exceptional. We try to make it something that is normal and that is completely not exceptional for people to engage in. I think a lot of our members are part of communities that have traditionally been left out of the civic engagement space, and just demonstrating to them that this work and being part of the political process is not something crazy or something difficult to do really helps them get involved and really do something to help their community. I think a lot of people who we work with feel that their vote may not matter, or that something as simple as stickering can really influence their community.
Mm-hmm. Has technology been very helpful for your group to communicate? Do you think that's your advantage? Because I do find it fascinating that you guys can move so many people without a flyer and without traditional ways of communicating. In the long term, do you think that's a good thing, or do you think that it takes all types of generations and all types of communication tools?
I think both, honestly. I think this past year has really shown us how much we can utilize technology to our advantage. I'm a part of many organizations that previously used to just meet in person, and that left out a lot of people depending on the location or the day, or just, you know, like not having a car and being able to get there and things like that. Yeah. And so I think organizing virtually has made the movement a lot more accessible to a lot of people. And I think, you know, we've also been able to connect a lot more with other people around the country and other organizing groups, honestly, all around the world, and just really take inspiration from each other and learn from each other and have a lot more conversations. So I know I've learned a lot this past year from organizing virtually, and it's been a lot easier to bring people in and kind of teach them the way that the movement works. I think definitely you need both types of action. I think a lot can happen virtually and a lot can happen online, especially because our generation has kind of grown up in this technological era. And so we know how to utilize like social media platforms and things like that really well. But I think there is also a huge place for in-person actions. And, you know, we can't do this alone as just one generation. We do need to engage every single generation. And so I think finding that balance after COVID is going to be really important to us in making sure our movement is as successful as possible.
You're tuned to Open Journal on Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston, 90.1 FM and digital HD Channel One. We're visiting with Julia Lewis and Devin Guevara, two of the three co-general coordinators for the Houston Youth Climate Strike. You mentioned, Julia, and I'd like to just follow up on this. Beyond youth involvement, some of us may still feel youthful, but wouldn't qualify. It's been a few years since I graduated high school. How can those older people tuning in right now, such as myself and others, act as allies to help effect positive change?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. I think probably the biggest thing is just to listen to the young people and don't speak over us. I think a lot of times young people are scared to join the movement because they feel like they don't have a place, or maybe they don't know as much as adults. And I think oftentimes adults can kind of speak down to us as young people, like consider us children and think maybe they know more than us, which is oftentimes true. But I think really centering youth voices and listening to what we have to say is really, really important. You know, one of the biggest focuses of the climate crisis is empowering and centering the voices of marginalized communities and the communities who are on the front lines of the crisis. And for us, that's our entire generation. So I think listening to us is really, really important. I think another thing is, you know, like we talked about earlier, we're balancing school and college applications and extracurriculars and sports and all of that sort of thing. So we don't have a lot of time. So oftentimes adults have sometimes, you know, more time on their hands to help. So that's also very helpful, is just pitching in into the movement whenever you can. And then obviously the biggest thing is just a lot of us can't vote. And so being really, really intentional with your vote and how you can civically engage and things like that are some of the most important things.
Mm-hmm. And overall, do you feel that you're getting diverse ages and groups? Do you see momentum pre-post COVID for those who might just be entering it? It is very daunting, but do you guys still have hope for the progress that we're making as citizens on this planet?
Yeah, I can just go really quick. I think for me personally, you know, if you don't have hope, what do you have, right? And so I think we've seen, especially over this past year, a lot of people engaging in the movement of all ages, which has been so inspiring. And I hope that continues post-COVID as well.
Mm-hmm. And Devin, your thoughts?
My thoughts are that there's 100% still time to be able to pass the legislation and push the corporations that need to be pushed in order to reach carbon neutrality by 2050. I think that especially right now, with everything being so virtual and accessible, youth are in a unique position of power. And even though a lot of us might not be able to vote, even though a lot of us don't have parents necessarily who are able to vote either, we still are part of a larger network of communities and interest groups that can enable us to speak our voice. A lot of people's ears, a lot of legislators, a lot of leaders in the world right now are listening to us and asking us for our demands. And it's up to us to make sure that we're specific in what we want, and make sure that when we're asked our opinion at the table, that we're prepared to answer that with solutions and prepared to support whatever is put on the table.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
Well, speaking of putting things on the table, there's a lot on everyone's tables right now, and we have a new administration that's putting a lot of new projects and money on the table, rolling out funding into infrastructure projects, many of which are tied to environmental causes that can actually effect some positive changes in the hopefully not too distant future. How do you feel the Biden administration is doing in its early days? Admittedly, it's only been not even 100. And do you think that they're, based on past observation, going to follow through and capable of following through on environmental issues and climate change?
I think it's been incredibly refreshing over the past few months just to see an administration who recognizes climate change and says that they will prioritize it. I think Biden's infrastructure plan that has just been rolled out is a really good start. I think climate change is such a ginormous issue that really affects absolutely everything, that I don't think in the long term this is going to be enough. But I think for now, it's a really good place to start. I think I have concerns about how the administration will follow through. I'm very interested to see what sort of bipartisan conversations Biden starts, because I think, as we've seen in Texas, bipartisanship is the only way that this can get done and that we can really, really fully address this crisis. So I think Biden has a lot to do. But I think as of right now, I am hopeful that this plan could be successful.
And if I could just add something, from our conversations with people that work on the Hill, a lot of legislators right now are looking at climate through a new lens. And the general consensus is that the infrastructure bill will contain some kind of appropriations to build that infrastructure needed for renewable energy. But most organizers also agreed that there needs to be a lot more than just money appropriations in order to reach the carbon neutral economy that we need to solve the climate crisis. And a big concern for the climate movement in general is that we are able to solve climate change, but there are ways of solving it that are less conscious of the most at-risk communities, and that there are ways that could disenfranchise certain people even more. And it's better to address climate change in a way that encompasses everyone than just picking one spot like a pipeline to fix. Whatever bill that comes up should be able to address every new pipeline that would come out or every future example of environmental injustice.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we wrap this, what is the best way for people to join or to help? Would it be sunrisemvmthtx.com, the Sunrise Movement Houston group, or is there a better way, Julia?
Yeah, so Houston Youth Climate Strike has become its own autonomous organization in the past year. So our new website is htxclimatestrike.org. And you can also find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, if you just look up Houston Youth Climate Strike. And all of those websites and social media accounts have a link that you can use to join. And you can also just check out our website, our upcoming projects, talk to us, engage with us. And those are the best ways to get in contact with us.
Fantastic. Well, Julia Lewis, Devin Guevara, I want to thank you so much for spending time and joining us on Open Journal. I wish you well and happy Earth Day.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Dear friends, it is time to wrap this edition of Open Journal. Thank you for your support. Thanks for the gift of your time and for keeping this radio station on the air, Houston's community station, KPFT. I'm Dwayne Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. Our program archive is available through kpft.org. And please subscribe to our podcast, KPFT OJ. We are a dedicated all-volunteer production staff, including Rambling Rick Campbell, Susan Phillips, and Maverick. Open Journal theme music by Kevin McLeod. Join us on Open Journal next time for more great conversations. Thanks for your donations and thanks for your support.
And as always, we like to leave you with a thought to carry you through the week. This comes to us from Aldo Leopold, who said, "We abuse land because we regard it as a commodity belonging to us. When we see land as being a community to which we belong, we may begin to use it with love and respect." Take care of each other. Peace.